Well, in case you do not know who I am, my name is Joe Miller, and I'm the pastor here at Broadway. And so I'm excited that you have decided to come out on a cold Christmas Eve where we got a little bit of snow. Some of you are probably excited about the snow. Some of you are not so excited about it, but we got some snow, so we've got a white Christmas, right? It'll stick around till tomorrow. Before we get started, I need to do something really quick. Number one, when you leave, so I've got a little car up here. Anybody like Hot Wheels? Okay, yes. I see small children going, Joe, yes. So the good news is this, is I love Hot Wheels. I remember buying these as a kid. But when you leave tonight, we'll see if we have enough. So kids, you get Hot Wheels first, okay? So we'll start there. But in a couple of weeks, on January 7th, we're going to do something called Drive. And many of you, I'm not going to have you raise your hand, but many of you are going to make a New Year's resolution. And most of the time what happens is we start the first month and we're really good, right? Month one is amazing, and then the other 11 just go downhill into a tailspin, right? So my hope for you and my hope for me is that we can start the new year with some good resolutions. And the way to make resolutions really work really well is to have a plan. And so we're going to do something called Drive, and I'm going to talk about five specific things that you can practice that will help you accomplish your goals in 2018. So we'll do that January 7th. So I'm giving you a Hot Wheel as you leave so you do not forget, because what do you do with cars? You drive them, right? Right, kids? That's what you do, even though you're not old enough to drive. So that's going on in a couple weeks. The other thing I need to do is this, is earlier, Bruce said whenever he shared the story and read the passage, the unfortunate thing is for many of us, especially if we have grown up in church, is we have heard this story countless times. And probably you are so familiar with the story that you could probably tell it better than I could. And as a matter of fact, you might get done at the end of the message and go, you know what, I think I could tell the story better than Joe. And you may be right. And you can come next year and you can tell the story. But here is the dilemma with that. The dilemma is we become so familiar with it is we are tempted to kind of sit on the outside, right? We're like sitting kind of like what you're doing right now is you're out there, I'm up here, and I've got to give the message. But what we do is we tend to kind of observe the Christmas story instead of participate in it. It's like going to a Christmas pageant or a Christmas play. Anybody go to one of those and watch a grandkid or their child in the Christmas play? You're there to observe and watch your kid. That's really what's going on in a Christmas pageant. But our temptation with the Christmas story is to do that very thing and to kind of sit on the outside and watch the story unfold instead of jumping into the story and participating in the story. And so tonight, what I want to do is I want to invite you and I want to invite me to participate in the story, and let's be active participants in it. Because here's something that we forget sometimes. We hear the story of Mary and Joseph, and we forget that they were ordinary people. And I'm convinced that God used ordinary people to bring about the miraculous birth of Christ because you and I are ordinary people. And if you want ordinary people to be a part of the story, you've got to tell the story about some ordinary people. So the ordinary people like you and like me lean in to the story. And so I invite you tonight to lean into the story. The other thing I need to say is this, is that for some of you here, you're tonight because someone bribed you and told you we're not getting presents until you went to the Christmas Eve, right? I don't know who those people are, but they're probably pretty mean. But you've been bribed, right? Or somebody told you you were not going to get Christmas dinner unless you came to Christmas Eve, okay? So here's the story. I want to also just address that, right? So I want to invite you into the story and to be a part of that story as well, even though you're like, I don't know about this whole thing. I'm not so sure about this Jesus thing. And it's okay. The awesome thing is this, is for most of us, our problem really is not Jesus. Even though we may not be a Christian or we're not so sure about this whole story, our problem is never Jesus. Usually, right? Usually our problem is with people like me. There's been some pastor, some religious leader, or some person that you're not really fond of, or some Christian who's made the Christmas story and made this whole thing something that is painful for you. And so I want to just let you know that I get where you're at. I understand where you're at. But what the thing I love about Jesus is this, and the story is this, is Jesus always said, hey, why don't you follow for a little bit and try this on and give it a test drive? And the thing that I would invite you and I would invite me to tonight is this, is you know what, lean in and maybe try it out and give it a test drive and say, you know what, maybe I'm going to kind of give some of this some thought and actually begin to follow. Now, the other thing I've got to do before we get started is, could I talk you into going to the office and grabbing me a water, because I'm getting really dry right now. That was not written in the sermon. So I want you to think a minute about Mary and Joseph. Here are two people who probably had some dreams and probably had some hopes, like any young couple probably would have had. And they probably started off this romance in some probably not traditional ways for you and me, but in some ways that were probably traditional for them. Thank you. And as they start this story, I've got to get a drink first. And as they start this story, it probably would have been an arranged marriage in the ancient world. It would have been an arranged marriage. And both parents would have found out some things about the other parents and found out some things about each one of these young people before they had arranged this marriage. Now, for some of us in the room, we're going, man, that sounds like a nightmare. And we're probably not going to practice that today. But young people, think about this. Your parents probably know you really well and could probably pick someone really good for you, right? Just joking, they probably can't. But that's what would have happened along the way. And for Mary and Joseph, what would have happened is Joseph would have made some promises in this engagement. And for you and I know when I got married, when Tina and I decided we were moving a little bit further in the relationship and I decided it was time to propose, I went out and bought a ring and we had a nice meal and I semi-surprised her with this engagement ring and asked her to marry me, and praise God, she said yes, right? Anybody marry up? I married up. But what happens in our lives is very different than what would have happened to Mary and Joseph, because for them, engagement was a legal binding thing. It was a contract, and we honor those things as well. Whenever we give an engagement ring, that we're going to get married, that's the plan. But for Mary and Joseph, what probably would have happened, more than likely, is whenever a young man proposed to a young Jewish woman, what would happen is he would come to her, and they would share a contract, and he would talk about all those things that he was going to honor in that relationship, all the things that he was going to do. And then what he would do after he shared with her those things, he would then offer her a cup of wine. Now, this is grape juice, parents. It's grape juice. But he would offer her a cup of wine. And he would say to her, if you agree to this engagement, if you agree to everything I have promised you, take and drink all of it. And the young woman, are we preaching yet? And the young woman would then take and drink the cup, and if she agreed to the whole marriage and agreed to everything, she would drink the entire cup. If she had some issues and she said, hey, we need to renegotiate something, she would not drink all the cup, and there would be a little bit more in there, and they would go back to figuring out how this would go. And then what would happen is after she drank that cup, this young man would then say to her, he would say, I go to prepare a place for you. And I'll be back. Sound familiar? Sound like some familiar language for those of us who've grown up in church? And then the young man would then go to his parents' house, and he would build an extra room onto his parents' house. Now, before he went off to do this and he said, I go to prepare a place for you, he would say to her, in my father's house are many rooms, and I'm adding one on for you. And he would go off and he would prepare this thing. And that is how Joseph and Mary's story begins. But along the way, God interrupts their lives, and God asks each of them to do something that they have to say yes to. And I'm sure for Mary and Joseph, they planned on having children at some point in time, but probably not yet, right? That they probably planned on having a family at some point in time, but not yet. And God asked them to bring this about. And not only do they kind of have to allow their lives to be interrupted by what God wants to do in their lives to bring about Jesus, that as those lives are interrupted, then guess what? Then there's a Roman census. And then all of a sudden, Joseph and Mary have got to travel 10 days from Nazareth all the way to Bethlehem so that they can be counted. And it would have been easy for Mary and Joseph to look at this whole situation and say, okay, God, why us? Why me? Why interrupt our lives in this way? I mean, they've been interrupted enough. It's enough that we've said yes. It's enough that all of a sudden people are going to talk. It's enough that all of our plans and all of our dreams and all of our hopes have been put on hold. And now the Roman government wants to count. And we've got to travel 10 days journey to Bethlehem. Now, we don't know how they traveled. I don't know if they traveled by donkey. I don't know if they traveled by foot. I don't know how they traveled. We don't know. But as they traveled, can you imagine, ladies, in the last stages of your pregnancy, going by foot anywhere? Anybody want to do that? I mean, let's say they have an animal to ride on. Okay, they probably did not have a camel. I mean, I haven't ridden a camel, but they're probably not comfortable. But imagine, ladies, that you are at the end of your pregnancy and you've got to travel on the back of some animal 10 days. Does that sound like a good time to you? And imagine this. Imagine that probably more than likely Mary had hoped, and probably why they had stayed in Nazareth was so that Mary could be around her family when she has the baby. And there's probably a midwife that Mary is very familiar with who is going to deliver this baby. And yet, she is going to a place where her mother probably cannot be with her to hold her hand during this pregnancy. And probably the midwife that she had hoped that would help deliver the baby is not going to be there. And she's putting her life in the hands of other people. And what if, even though God has promised, what if this baby dies along the way as they travel to Bethlehem? There are so many unknowns. There are so many things that are going on that Mary and Joseph could have said, okay, God, why us? Why are all these things going on? Now, as they travel to Bethlehem, here are those things that we forget because, friends, this is a great nativity set, by the way, from Bethlehem, as a matter of fact. But sometimes with the Christmas story, we've seen this so much that we just think that that's all there was. And let's remember that every family is traveling to their hometown for this census. And as Mary and Joseph travel, they are probably traveling with other pilgrims who are making their way back to their hometown. And when Mary and Joseph arrive in Bethlehem, what we begin to think, and maybe you've heard this, I don't know, but what we begin to think is when we hear that there is no room in the inn, we're thinking Holiday Inn, right? I mean, I have always found room in a Holiday Inn. There is always a vacancy, right? Or we're thinking of some sort of motel or something like that. And I really, to be honest with you, wish they would just change the translation and get in out of there because it just messes with our minds. Because the word that is used there is a Greek word, and it's kataluma. And kataluma meant guest room. When Jesus goes to have the Passover meal with his disciples, they go to a kataluma, a guest room. That's where they go. And more than likely, Mary and Joseph have traveled to Joseph's parents' house. And as they arrive, not only is Joseph and Mary there, but the rest of Joseph's family is probably there. And so this house is full. Imagine Christmas dinner, right, with all of your relatives. That's kind of what's going on, only someone's having a baby. But everybody would be arriving. Everybody would be staying with Joseph's parents. So when they get there, it is no surprise that there is not a whole lot, there's not a lot of room as they arrive. And then, though, we read the story and we go, who in the world puts baby Jesus in the barn? I mean, who does that? Nobody wants to do those things. But Mary, the other thing that we have to think about is this, is that Mary, since she was pregnant and about to give birth, she would have been unclean. And ladies, don't let that sink in too long, right? But she would have been unclean because she was having a baby. And the problem with allowing her to be in the guest room with everybody else is that she would have made everybody else unclean in the room. So they had to be in this lower room, which is where they kept the animals, and it was almost like a garage. Anybody have a garage? Most of us have a garage. But these unexpected things along the way could have caused Mary and Joseph to have some serious doubts. And it seems like every interruption was a question mark. Every interruption was a problem. And when Mary and Joseph said yes to bringing about this miraculous thing, they did not know what the future was going to look like. God had not explained everything. God didn't ask them if they were prepared. God didn't ask them if they were ready. He just simply asked them if they would be a part of what he wanted to do. And these two very ordinary people are a part of something miraculous. And God uses two ordinary people because they are people just like you and just like me. Because, like Joseph and Mary, when our lives are out of whack, can we put life on hold? When things aren't going according to plan, can we hit the easy button? When things all of a sudden seem like they just are not going to work out, we can't just put life on hold. We can't say, well, wait, I'm just going to go down the road about 6 months and see how this goes. That's not how life works out. I've got a friend right now who is going through losing her dad this time of year. And unfortunately for her, she can't just put life on hold. She can't say, hey, can we just wait till after Christmas to let this happen? That's not how life goes. Life does not work that way. It didn't work that way for Joseph. It didn't work that way for Mary. And it doesn't work that way for you and for me. And since the only thing certain in Joseph and Mary's life is Jesus, the one thing certain in your life and in my life is Jesus. And you and I need the miracle of Christmas. And the rest of the world needs this same miracle. We need the hope of Christmas. We need the unconditional love of Christmas. We need mercy and forgiveness. And we need God to move in our lives. And so here's what I would say to you, and here's what I would say to me. One, since the Christmas season can be amazingly busy, would you all just pause a minute and let's take a deep breath? How can you imagine Joseph and Mary in the midst of the chaos needing to just take a breath? And perhaps the most miraculous thing you and I need tonight is that we would take a breath. That we would allow the miracle of Christmas to breathe fresh into our lives. Because we live in a world of chaos. We live in a world that goes nonstop. But Jesus and but the miracle of Christmas, the story of Christmas, invites you and I to pause and invites us just to put everything on hold for a moment and just breathe in God's love and allow him to transform us. So friends, can we breathe tonight? And can we breathe the story of Christmas fresh in the lives of people around us and allow the Spirit of God to breathe fresh into us? That would be my prayer for you, and that would be my prayer for me, that we would allow God's interruption of Christmas to breathe into our lives.